So we've already talked about the state of the state, did a breakdown of that from the governor. But we know leading up to the legislative session, there are a lot of priorities on the minds of the lawmakers from both sides of the aisle. And that is where we turn to our friend Mike Cerulli from News 8, political reporter, in my opinion, one of the best in the state, and also a dear friend of mine. Mike, how was the opening of legislative session? I know you were there.
Yeah, it's always busy, always a scramble.
Did you get any sleep last night, Mike?
Do I sound a little tired?
No, no, you sound perfect. No, I'm just kidding. No, okay. I would imagine opening day is chaos. I would imagine.
Yeah, and I would say one of the more interesting things about yesterday's opening day was the state Senate went directly into session. Not directly, but you know, a couple hours later, went right into session to vote on expanding the governor's emergency spending authorities. So that's sort of a novel event and made the running around and the reporting of it all slightly more complicated. But it was interesting, and it was interesting to see also listen to the governor's speech. He talked about it. He literally had a line in the speech where he said, "Hey, I would like you to please expand my spending authority." And then literally a couple hours later, the state Senate did just that. So cause and effect right there in a span of maybe 3 hours.
Do you feel like that's an implication, Mike, of this session? Because I think no matter where you sit politically, everybody is looking at affordability. Now, how they attack affordability in the state is another thing. But it does seem like this session, I want to be hopeful that we get down to it and figure out what those priorities are. So, for example, if it is energy costs, having really thoughtful conversation and actually finding more compromise instead of just backdoor meetings. This is what my party wants. This is what your party wants. We're going to do this. We're not going to do that. And then focusing on things that are kind of trivial, not to say that they don't matter, but to really focus in on the few things that will have the biggest impact for our state. And you know, to your point, to have the governor address it at noon and then a few hours later to have it in the Senate that same day, I would hope could be indicative of what this session could look like. I don't know what you think.
Well, I don't know if it's indicative of what the session will look like in terms of the scope of the policies. I think it's indicative of what the session will look like in terms of the immediacy of some of the demands and the pressures being put on the state government by a number of factors, probably chief among them being federal policy changes. The reason the state Senate had to go in today and change, or yesterday rather, and change that the state House will go in today and do the same, and there's some very legitimate debate about why and how this happened yesterday, which is the governor had been granted the authority to spend, if people remember, back in the November special session, the legislature created a $500 million fund. They took $500 million, effectively surplus dollars, and said, "Governor, you have the authority to spend this." Basically unilateral authority. The legislative leadership, most of them Democrats, they can veto it if they want to, but they can't direct the spending. Only the governor can do that. And you have to spend the money, governor, on things that are related to federal policy changes. But other than that, you've got the keys to the vehicle until February 4th, which, of course, was yesterday. So what they did yesterday was extend out that all those authorities through the end of the fiscal year. So the governor now has, and there's about 300 some odd million dollars left in that fund. Of course, we've covered how the governor spent about $170-200 million out of it on health insurance premiums and food assistance and shoring up some of the state's social services. And so they needed to act, in the Democratic view, they needed to act yesterday to make sure that the governor had these powers continuing and that there wasn't sort of a lapse in them because, you know, we only know what could happen, right? A government shutdown, more of these sort of erratic grant pullbacks that we've seen. Oftentimes, the recipients of those grants get no notice beforehand until they're being told, "We're very sorry, but your grant is being pulled." So there was some immediacy to what happened yesterday, but I think it's a common theme that will stretch throughout the session of the state's finances are being altered, not by anything the state has done, but by a lot of things that Washington is doing. So how will they choose to respond to that? What do they choose to maybe push off and say, let's wait and see what happens? And what do they choose to act on?
Which I don't totally hate? I mean, I always say in a supermajority state, and it wouldn't matter if the party was the other way, I'd still feel the same way about this. Is, you know, like you said, when you've got a governor that also aligns with the majority, you know, sometimes that can be really worrisome, because what he feels he wants to spend that money on, you're not really getting kind of a bipartisan support on it. However, I think the governor's already proven so far that he is very thoughtful in his spending. I mean, when you talk about health insurance and food insecurity, that is something that the average Connecticut resident, regardless of their political affiliation, that matters. People to be able to have health insurance and people to be able to have food on the table. I just don't know anybody who doesn't agree with that. That being said, I can understand needing to extend it, and I'm hopeful because, you know, we don't know where we're going to need to use that money just yet. It's not incredibly clear, I would think, at this point, Mike, and please feel free to correct me. It's really not incredibly clear, I feel like, at this point, where you would put that money to offset federal funding cuts.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously no shortage of people who have ideas about where they'd like to see that money spent.
Of course.
But I would say when the fund was created, and this is part of the questions that I frankly will ask Democratic legislative leadership today, there was always, maybe not in their minds, but I think publicly, there was sort of a question about the intention behind this fund. This fund was created several days after the last government shutdown ended. And there was some folks who watched the effects of the government shutdown, particularly the administration's fight with states, including Connecticut, over SNAP funding. And, of course, it was a point in time where SNAP funding was very imperiled. And people saw that and assumed, well, this $500 million is going to go help SNAP funding that was affected due to the shutdown. And, of course, the state's Democratic leadership said, sure, if the government shutdown is still going on, we will spend some of this money on SNAP. And then, of course, the government shutdown ended, and there were some questions of, well, why are we putting $500 million? And the Democratic leadership said, well, this was actually never just intended only for a government shutdown. It was intended for the impacts of the big, beautiful bill, which starts to kick into effect this year. We'll see some tax changes. A lot of people will see, in fact, lower taxes this year, because some of the big, beautiful bill tax changes are retroactive to the previous year. So filers this year will see it. But we'll also see the beginning of new requirements on the Medicaid and the SNAP program, which are intended to deliver pretty large cost savings over the next few years. The translation of that is fewer benefits go out. And they do that. The bill tries to accomplish that through eligibility requirements. One of the things the state has spent some of the $500 million on is to make sure the Social Services Agency can get all the recipients ready for those new eligibility requirements. But the biggest part of the $500 million in spending, or $500 million in funding that they've allocated for this, was for the health insurance premiums, which wasn't related to the government shutdown, isn't really related to the big, beautiful bill in terms of the letter of that law. These were expiring enhanced premiums that were established during the COVID era, that the Congress couldn't figure out what to do with them, and they expired on January 1st. So there's all these different categories of ways that they could spend money. And, you know, we might have another government shutdown. We might have more extreme effects from the big, beautiful bill, H.R. 1, as it's called. There might be more of these grant pullbacks. I haven't seen anything become of this, but the president did at one point this year threaten to pull federal funding in its entirety from states that have laws like Connecticut's Trust Act. He said he was going to do that on February 1st. That obviously hasn't happened yet. But things like that are kind of always on the horizon in today's day and age. But
correct me if I'm wrong, Mike. So the big thing, just so I know, so yesterday's big vote in the Senate, though, was to extend the governor's basically deadline to spend that money from February 4th till the end of session.
I believe it's to the end of next session, effectively.
Oh, wow.
It's essentially a
calendar year. Okay.
And I have to read the language actually more closely today, because yesterday we were focused on the speech. Today, since this is the only item they're taking up in the House, this will be the focus of our coverage today. But I believe it's effectively another calendar year of these authorities.
Okay.
And there's about a little more than $300 million remaining inside the fund.
Okay. Got it. 2026 legislative session is officially underway, and it's going to go until the beginning of May. And so we'll probably be checking in with political reporter Mike Cerulli of News 8 pretty frequently, just because that's what we do every session. And I love getting Mike's take on things. You know, outside of the legislative session, what I love about Mike's reporting is that he is constantly in contact with lawmakers across the state, both sides of the aisle. And it always has his eye on, again, issues in Connecticut that really matter, not just to lawmakers, but essentially to residents in our state. So, Mike, I'd love to get your opinion on this. What do you believe is going to get the most attention during this session? That's a very huge, it's a very big ask of you, but I'm just curious, kind of what is the sense you're getting when you've been hearing from lawmakers leading up to the session and then even the chatter, you know, in the first day?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things you'll hear a lot about is this plan for a $200 rebate, $400 for family, $320 for some of those head of household filers. It amounts to $500 million in total state spending, one time, of course, happening in an election year, which is, you know, interesting. people have thoughts on that. But I think the narrative here is going to be what the governor said yesterday was what we heard, all of us who listened to the speech, certainly the folks at home who maybe aren't familiar with state finances, what they heard was the governor wants to give $200 checks to a bunch of people, right? What some legislators in the room heard was, and many of them Democrats, what they heard was the governor is willing to spend $500 million this year. And you've talked about, Melissa, a lot about the fiscal guardrails. You would need to depart temporarily from the fiscal guardrails in order to spend $500 million. Mm-hmm. So what some of the Democrats, including many of the progressives, heard from the speeches, the governor is willing to depart from the guardrails, and depending on how you look at it, it's at least to the tune of $500 million or at maximum to the tune of $500 million. And there are legislators who believe the governor isn't necessarily married to the idea of this rebate, but there might be other ways that they could spend this money on other kinds of tax breaks. The State Senate Democratic Caucus has always been interested in a child tax credit, so middle-class families in that sort of $100,000 to $200,000 income range, folks that are just above the threshold for getting the earned income tax credit, maybe giving them a $600 per child tax credit. Of course, that's supposed to be a program that sustains. They're talking about one-time spending here. You get into an age-old conversation about sustainable spending versus kind of a one-time sugar high. But that is going to be a narrative here because, again, whether he intended it or not, and I suspect he did intend at least some of this, the governor, he was signaling to Democrats that there is room to spend a little bit more. And, of course, the color to all of that being this is happening in election year. The governor and everyone in that room are on the ballot.
Right.
And, you know, they would sure love to take credit for something that happens in an election year.
Right.
That sends money to people. How big that group of people is, how much money they each get, how that's determined if they get it or not, I think we'll see a debate about that in the session.
I mean, and not to go backwards, because I certainly have thoughts on the rebates. First of all, I love how you said a sugar high versus something sustainable, because that's exactly it. To me, and I know people always knock that I say this, but it is just checkmark for me, the fact that we addressed energy or we addressed cost by giving you a rebate. Don't bother. To me, I always think that is not a solution. That's a Band-Aid when you need surgery. And to circle back, Mike, to what you were talking about initially with what passed in the Senate yesterday, which is going to the House today, that money, I find it very fascinating because I did check. And in fact, it is supposed to now, as you mentioned, be in effect for a calendar year. That is such a leg up for somebody who is running for re-election to have that kind of power and to put money towards entities or organizations or populations saying, hey, I'm going to throw you a little bit of money because I have the power to do that, but I need a vote. That is so dangerous. As you're talking about an election year, immediately I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, wait a minute. So he just got access to 300 and some odd million dollars, which is not in the budget, and he gets the discretion of it, and he's got a year to decide what he wants to do with it during the same year he's running for re-election. That's crazy. I'm sorry that that took me a few minutes to kind of get there, but I got there, and now I don't like that. I don't know if I like that at all. I don't know if I like that at all, because there's no oversight. There's no one who's going to essentially veto it, and they're just going to say, yep, and I don't know how I feel about that. I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, these are the questions, Melissa, that the Republicans have asked about this every step of the way.
Residents should ask about that. I'm just saying. That should not even be a partisan question. How can anyone look at that and say that that's fair? Like, if I'm Josh Elliott, I'm mad about that. I'm just saying, like, if you're anybody, I would be mad about that. That is a power that you are giving to somebody who is in an election year and is going to do anything he can to get the votes. And that is a crazy upper hand power, I think, you just gave to the, not you, what's Mike Cerulli. That's wild. That is wild to me.
Yeah, no, this is exactly what critics of this plan have called out. The principle of giving one person sole discretionary control, but it mirrors a lot of arguments, frankly, Melissa, about executive power. If you kind of want to get to the core of what we're talking about here, which is the Democrats who lead the legislature have said, look, these federal cuts are so erratic. They sometimes happen without any notice other than a letter from the federal government saying to a school district or to a nonprofit or to sometimes even the state government, mm-hmm. sorry, but this money's not coming to you anymore. And in the case of, I'll give you one example from the most recent round of spending out of the fund, the state fund, there was a $4.5 million worth of federal money grant to three school districts, Hartford, Waterbury, and New Haven. They were providing services sort of outside the classroom services, counseling. They call them wraparound services for students. And that was pulled, right? And there were genuine concerns in some of these districts that some of the professionals, counselors and things like that, who were providing these services might just lose their jobs. So not only do you have students who are losing the services, but you also have professionals who are losing their jobs and maybe going elsewhere to find employment. And then if you ever do get the chance to ramp those programs back up, you're starting kind of from zero. So they kick the money in, and the state Senate president, the very progressive Democrat named Marty Looney, has this phrase. He says, you know, the state legislature is like, you know, making them do anything is like turning a battleship around. And he would rather give one guy, the governor, kind of a speedboat with $300 million in it to be able to maneuver. Interestingly,
right.
The general argument there, and this is the kind of academic part that I find interesting.
Right.
The general argument there that the executive can act faster and should have that authority, it's not exactly the argument that people make when they say the president should be able to pull back these funding grants unilaterally at the federal level.
Right.
But it kind of is.
Right. Well, and the thing here, Mike, is unfortunately I've run out of time, but I could talk to you for 5 hours. This is why I think at some point you and I need to like co-host a show. The thing that bothers me about that is you're so right. I mean, right. What you just said makes total sense. And I think the big thing there is, you know, the example you gave is brilliant. But if I'm a Bridgeporter, if I'm another school district saying that we don't have enough funding, how in the world do you just justify that these three districts got money? I mean, again, with no oversight and just one person making that call, that is just garbage during an election year. And the fact that that just passed in the Senate yesterday, the House is going to get it today, probably from the majority, they're going to pass it. Even if you are a Democrat, like I said, if you're Josh Elliott, who wants to be the Democratic nomination in this race for governor, I'd be mad about it. So it shouldn't even be just a Republican thing. I would just be mad in general that one person is making a call on over $300 million that is not in the budget. Just saying. But Mike Cerulli, always appreciate you. Thank you so much for what you do and for always giving us the time. And obviously, I'm going to have you on a lot during the session, which again is going until the beginning of May. Mike Cerulli of News 8 right here on WICC.